Howdy all. Today, we are, in a way, carrying on where we've been, looking at loving one another, but today also starts sort of almost like chapter two. When we think about love one another, for the last month, we've been considering that oneness that we're invited into by Jesus to become part of this family, part of his church, to be one together. And but starting today, we're going to be more thinking about the one another. So what does that look like for us within this one community to love one? Like literally to love somebody else. What might that look like? And we're suggesting that a lot of it happens around the table. Or maybe one of the reasons it doesn't happen as much as it could is because we're not often around the table. When I think of my house, the table is a significant piece of furniture in our house. I can remember buying our table and then specifically ordering the chairs that go with our table. So if you've been to our house, it's a big long table. And then when we bought it, we only bought two chairs. And then we only recently got two more chairs. So you might think we can't fit many people around our table, but the two chairs we bought were bench seats. So they run the full length of the table. And it's something that we've always liked. Like, well, the house we're in at the time was very tiny, and we had this one little area that to fit our dining room sort of in. And so we bought this table and these two bench seats that completely filled our dining room. So one bench went along the wall, and you had to slide in there, and then the long table sort of went to the end, and then the bench was on the other side. And one of the things that was cool when we had little kids is you can obviously fit quite a few around the table, but as they got bigger and their friends got bigger, it becomes quite crammed, which is actually a really cool thing around the table. I think in some ways, without realizing it, we sort of adopted this thought that being around the table is quite a close thing. Like, you know how we all sit in individual chairs around the table? Like, we like our space, don't we? And we've talked about that over the last few weeks. And we still like our space, you know, but you get on a bench seat and you've got, and the way it was at our house, you'd have to shuffle along to the end and then the next person would have to shuffle along and you had to fill the bench seat up. And when friends are over, she gets real cozy. And we still have that table and chairs today that we got when our kids were little. One of the things that I love at our house is that we dinner around the table every night. There's the odd night that I cheat, like that I go, man, there's no one else here, Lorraine, except you and me. We could go and, you know, go to the lounge. And sometimes I win and we do, and sometimes I don't and we still stay at the table. And it's been interesting, like last year we got to the point where at times there was just Lorraine and I and our youngest son and we would still have dinner at the table. And I'll tell you the main reason was because that's what he expected. That's what was normal, being around the table. There's a bit of a joke going on in our family at the moment around food too, because obviously you gather around the table for food, right? That's like central item. We gather there to eat and to drink. And I like food. Some of you wonder, why does this crazy guy run? I run because I love food. Because you should see how much I eat. Like, I just have to keep running because otherwise I wouldn't be the size I am, because I eat a lot. I love food. I come from a family who love food. And in my family, it was obvious that we love food. And so at my table at the moment, if I sit at the table, and especially if some of my kids have their friends there, which is quite often at the moment, they all get the giggles and they chuckle and they laugh at me. And we're not talking like six-year-olds, we're talking like late teens. And they just and one of them in particular, she just cracks up when she comes over because she goes, he's doing it again. And it's like, apparently, as the meal's beginning and, you know, the food comes out and they're all getting ready to eat and I start putting all the condiments on. In fact, they can all be finished the meal by the time I get my meal ready, you know. I'm just putting on that cracked pepper and rock salt and all the bits of things to do it. And then apparently I make noises at the table before we've even started the meal. I never realised this. And this friend of ours who comes over sometimes, she's just going like, he's making those noises again, you know. It's like, I'm just like, And so the last two times that this has happened, they're making the noises before I make the noise. Like they're looking at me, and as I'm about to make the noise, I hear across the table, ah. I'm just like, no, I don't. And it's like, yeah, you do. And this is what they say, you love food, don't you? And I do. I love food. But I really love what happens around the table at my house. I really do. I love the fact that my boys like having dinner around the table. I mean, there were the younger years, you know, which it can be a trial around the table. You know, and I can remember when I was a kid around the table, it was that back in the day when your mum would boil the stuff out of the stuff, you know, and you'd have to chew on that, and then you'd be having it in your mouth and you couldn't get it down, and you weren't allowed down from the table until that was done. Not all around the table experiences and memories are great ones, right? But my boys are to a stage where they love being around the table. And their friends come, and they sit around the table, and they love being around the table. What we find is that for a lot of families, there's been no experience, and there's no joy of being around the table. Things are changing. I remember my first flat I was in with a bunch of guys, and we would so look forward to going to the supermarket to have a big spend up every fortnight, and we would fill two trolleys up with food. You know, we were all working, and we'd spend half our money on food, and we'd bring all this home, and then that night was like a feast, you know, and we'd eat half the groceries for 2 weeks in one night. We literally sit down with 2 litre ice creams each, we'd choose a flavour each, and it was our movie night with video, and in our flat just over in Whitianui there, and we would put the video in, the VCR, that's that square box thing with the tape, and we would eat a 2 litre ice cream each. We used to, as a flat, have dinner together every night. How unusual is that? You know the flats that I know about? Everyone has their own shelf in the cupboard, their own compartment in the fridge. Everyone does their own. You know, what's going on with that? We've lost something about coming around the table. You see, around the table is where you have conversation. Yeah. Around the table is where you listen. Around the table is where questions get asked. I get freaked out by some of the questions that get asked at my table. I just look to Lorraine, like, because they're hard questions. And what surprised me, a while ago, we had this really hard question come up at the table, and the quietest of my sons, the youngest, he gives this great answer. And I'm like, where did that come from? But it happens around the table. I want to tell you this. Jesus would love to eat at my house because he loved food too. But more than that, he would love to be there and be involved with what's going around the table. I'm not saying that he would be going like, oh, that's really nice what the Forlongs do around the table. No, I'm not saying that. I'm saying he would love to be in on that. That's where he would be. And he would love to be around the table at your house too. And he would love your food and your drink as well. You see, there's this weird thing. Jesus comes to this point in his ministry here on earth. And it tells us in Luke 7 that Jesus gives a description of himself. It's a kind of a bizarre description, really. He calls himself the Son of Man. That title, Son of Man, means one that has come from God with the authority of God. So you think, oh, well, if Jesus is pulling out the Son of Man card, he must be going to say one of his really important things. Because he would say things like, the Son of Man, the one come from God with the authority of God, the Son of Man. And he says when he meets Zacchaeus, that guy who was rejected. And when, what does he do with Zacchaeus? He goes to Zacchaeus' home. He's around the table. And he says that the Son of Man has come to seek and save the lost. That's the kind of stuff we expect when we hear Jesus say Son of Man. Another place he says the Son of Man hasn't come to be served, but to serve and give his life a ransom for many. You see, when Jesus talks about God coming from God with the authority of God, Son of Man, he says, man, he's about seeking people, saving people. He's about serving us. He's about ransoming and saving us, going to the cross for us. But there's these really interesting words. Just have a look at Luke 7. And it's in between verse 33-36. Sorry, I'm just going to pull up my real Bible. Not that my other one's not real, my tablet, but I just didn't write down which verse it was. Okay, verse 34. This is so interesting that Jesus says this of himself. Luke 7:34, the Son of Man came eating and drinking. Like, isn't that out there? Like, so the Son of Man came to seek and save the lost. Of course he did. The Son of Man did not come to serve, but to be served. That surprises us. And give his life a ransom for many? Man, yeah, we know about the cross. Did you know that Jesus said the Son of Man came eating and drinking? He came from God with the authority of God. And what did he do with that? He ate and he drank. He gathered around the table with people. It's really important to him. Now, what's really interesting is just backtrack your Bible up to chapter 5, Luke 5. And we have in Luke 5:27, Jesus meets a guy called Levi. He's a tax collector. He's an outcast. In a way, he's like a stranger to the house of Israel. He was born an Israelite, but he's been rejected. He's outside because he's a tax collector and he's working for the foreign oppressive governance of Rome. And Jesus calls him to follow him, and Levi follows him, and then Levi meets Jesus, knows Jesus, and so the automatic thing he does is he wants to get Jesus around the table, because that's what you do. That's what friends do. And so he says, Jesus, you're like my new best buddy, you're my new best friend, come to my house and have a meal around the table with me. By the way, I'm inviting all my friends. They're all the other rejected people. They're all the other outsiders and strangers to the house of Israel. I've invited all of them. They're called tax collectors and sinners, by the way, and that's not a nice phrase. And so they're all invited, and they have this feast together. Look at verse 29. Then Levi held a banquet for Jesus at his house, and a large crowd of tax collectors and others were eating with them. But the Pharisees and the teachers of the law, these are the religious leaders who belong to their sect, complained to his disciples, why do you eat and drink with tax collectors and sinners? Jesus answered them, it's not the healthy who need a doctor, but the sick. I've not come to call the righteous, but sinners to repentance. See, it's a slur. Like, this idea of Jesus eating and drinking was something that said to us several times, Luke records it, that the Pharisees look at Jesus and they go, you say you're from God with the authority of God, but you eat and drink with people that we wouldn't eat and drink with. You are around the table with people we would never be around the table with. You're with tax collectors and sinners. What are you doing? And it's interesting in that chapter 7, just go back there, that Jesus is comparing himself like with John the Baptist, saying, you guys rejected John and you reject me, and John comes here fasting and looking all gloomy and you reject him, and I come here having a party with tax collectors and sinners, and you tell me off. You can't win with you guys. And that's where he says, the Son of Man came eating and drinking, and you say, here is a glutton and a drunkard, a friend of tax collectors and sinners. What I want to tell you is this. Jesus is in a culture where gathering around the table and doing hospitality and eating and drinking is really valued. He's from a culture at that time, what we'd call an Oriental culture. Today we might call it a Middle Eastern culture, where you don't want to leave anybody on the outside. You want to welcome people into your home as you as a family would welcome a stranger in, maybe somebody who's new to the town or the village, into your home. You represent the whole village, the whole community. And the way that you show hospitality and treat the stranger, and they're a stranger no more, and they're in your home, will reflect on the whole community. If you mistreat them, that will reflect on the whole community. So here you are, you show hospitality, you bring this person in, and at the same time as you welcome them across your door and into your home, you accept them. And when you sit with them around table, on whether that be on cushions, on the floor, on chairs, however it is, that when you welcome them into your home and you show hospitality and you're around the table together, you treat them as equals. And there's acceptance. And there's welcome. See, that's the kind of culture that Jesus is in. But what's interesting with Jesus is that he's considered abnormal in his culture because he does something that others aren't doing. For Jesus, no one's a stranger. There's no discrimination. He will have food and drink with sinners and tax collectors. He will gather around the table with anyone. Like Luke records several times that he's with tax collectors and sinners. Three times. Do you know what he also records? That three times he's with Pharisees. Three times Jesus is having meals in Luke's story with those who say, you're a glutton and a drunkard. Do you see that? That Jesus isn't just about the down and outer. He's about the religious leaders who are in his face. And he'll go, I will meet round the table with you as well. Because I love you too. You see Jesus just gather around the table. And to such an extent that though the Pharisees would say, you come eating and drinking? And Jesus would say, I'll take that badge. The Son of Man, from God with the authority of God, came eating and drinking. You call him a glutton and you call him a drunkard, but I want to say that's who I am. I come and I eat and I drink with people. I'll eat and drink with tax collectors and sinners. I'll eat and drink with Pharisees. I'll eat and drink one-on-one. I'll eat and drink with a whole crowd on a mountainside. And when I want to do my really significant stuff, you're going to probably find me around a table. You're going to find me in an upper room around a table with 12 guys as I share my final words and my final food, what we call the Last Supper. And I'll institute a meal called communion. And we will eat and drink together at my most significant hour before I'm about to be betrayed and go to the cross. And you see Jesus risen from the dead. And what's he doing? He's revealing himself through breaking bread with the two from Emmaus. We see him in the upper room again with the disciples and he's saying, give me something to eat. Let's eat together so you can see I'm really alive and it's really me. And then we see the last interaction he has. He's by a lakeside and what's he doing? He's having breakfast with the disciples. Jesus is big on this. So when we come to John 13 and Jesus says this in that upper room to his disciples and to us, he would say, I want you to get this new command of mine. This thing that's most important. I want you to love one another as I have loved you. And it's not the only way, but it's a significant way. How has he loved them? Around the table. He's gone, I'm going to welcome you, accept you, treat you as equals around this table. Because I love you. So if we want to love like that, if Jesus says, love one another as I have loved you, we need to love in the way Jesus loves. So another thing that shouldn't surprise us is then we come to the new rest of the New Testament and the apostles, you know, one of the things that they exhort us to do, when they talk about love, hospitality. You see that? Look at 1 Peter 4. There's three places where in Romans and in Peter and in Hebrews, the same thing happens again and again and again. 1 Peter 4, verse 8. Above all, love each other deeply because love covers a multitude of sins. Offer hospitality to one another without grumbling. Now, in all three of these places, both in Romans 12 and in Hebrews 13, and here we have it in 1 Peter 4, when he talks about hospitality, when Paul talks about it, when Peter talks about it, it's right alongside what loving each other deeply looks like. What loving each other as family looks like. What showing compassion to the needy looks like. You have a look at these passages, and it's almost like sandwiched in the middle, excuse the pun, is practice hospitality, offer hospitality, be hospitable to one another. Get around the table. The word hospitality means this. There's two words that go together. Okay, it means love, a stranger. This love is the love of a brother or a friend. Someone who's dear to you. It's an affectionate love. I love this friend. Here's my friend Paul here. I love Paul. Paul's a friend. He's saying, have that love for that guy that you've never met before. Have the brotherly love for the stranger because they're a stranger no more because you gather around the table and you welcome them and you accept them and you treat them as equal. That's what hospitality is. So I want to invite two of our hospitable people up on stage, Hannah and Elizabeth. Come on up. And What we're going to be doing over the next 4 weeks is as we consider God's word and especially the life of Jesus, and we think about love one another as I've loved you, we want to see also some examples of that love. And so I've invited these two amazing people because they love people. The reason I know that is because they have people around their table. These are the real deal over here around hospitality. Okay, and I think that they have a story to each tell, which is pretty cool. So each week we're going to interview some different people, look at God's word, look at Jesus, look at these guys and whoever's coming next, and see what we might learn about loving one another. So very cool to have you here. Whew. You ready? Who wants to hold the microphone? Okay, just want to test that, see it's all working.
Hello.
Cool. That's awesome. So this is Hannah Print, and this is Elizabeth Taylor. So who knows Elizabeth here? Anyone know Elizabeth? A few of you, anyone know Hannah? Cool, so they're known, okay, that's cool. Now, Hannah and Derek, how long have you guys been here at City Bible Church? Quite a long time, eh?
Yeah, quite a while now.
Like 8 years?
Seven or eight years,
which has been cool. One of the things you might not know is that, like, in this church we have an amazing ministry called Young Families Ministry, and Hannah was one of the ones who, along with a few others, actually initiated that. They came to my office one day and knocked on the door and went, hey, we think there's this problem in the church, and we think that as young families we need to be a better community, and we've got all these ideas, and can we do it? And I was like, yeah, sure. And then they did. And we've got this amazing ministry that's developed, and you were one of the ones who initiated that, which is really cool. So you're a registered nurse? That's right, yep.
Yes.
But you're not nursing at the moment, or you are?
Not nursing at the moment.
Okay, yeah, but you kind of are.
In a way, yeah.
In a way, we'll find out more about that as we go. So you're like a full-time nurse in some ways, as well as a mum, and that's amazing. Elizabeth, I've known you for just forever, like for ages, and it's really cool thinking about hospitality today because for a while, about 30 years ago, I lived next door to your mum and dad, and they used to show us hospitality, which was really cool. So I just think that's pretty cool to have you here today. But Elizabeth, for those that don't know, is one of our trustees for Agora Community Trust, and so does an amazing job of that. And I think that that's cool because Agora Community Trust has quite a hospitality core to what it does, and Elizabeth uses her gifts of hospitality within that, like, governance of trustee as well, which is awesome. But you guys will probably, like, introduce us a bit about family and stuff as we go. But I know for the reason I've invited both of you to come is that both of you are like, we'd call it in the old-fashioned way, given to hospitality. Like, you're people that actually do enjoy sharing your home with others. And we know hospitality is more than just eating and drinking. It's about welcome, it's about acceptance, it's about home. But what I'm keen to know is the why. Okay, so like why for each of you are you actually, I think, reasonably passionate about hospitality? Why is that?
Well, I think hospitality is something that I've been brought up with. It's something that's always been present in our family and in our extended family as well. I remember my grandma and my granddad always working really hard to welcome people into their home. They were people that would work hard at providing for maybe church functions, and they also, just about every single Sunday, I think, they would have someone over for Sunday lunch, and it would normally be a roast, you know, like they did back in the day. And my grandma would put a lot of time and effort into that, and it would be something that she would always take pride in doing and do really well. And I was talking to my mum about hospitality this week and asking about my nana, because I know hospitality looked a bit different for her. They were from a farming community, and she said that she remembers carrying big picnic baskets full of food to the back of the farm to feed the men that would be working on the farm at harvest time. And so that would be something that would... there'd be periods of time where it would be kind of full on, kind of providing for people, and then, it would become an ebbs and flows. And in my family, as a child, I was brought up in a family where my parents were quite heavily involved in ministry, and so our family always, we had people coming and going through our home, and sometimes that would be for a bed, you know, for the night, or it might be for a meal for a group of teenagers, or a planned meal to catch up with a family. So that, yeah, it's definitely something that's been a norm for me, probably before it became a reality for me that I felt called to do it, and like God's actually asking me to do it as well. It's not just a norm, but something that he really wants me to do. So I think that passion has come from growing up with it, but also I really enjoy it. I really love being able to show love to my friends and my family by making a really great meal, or I don't know, making a batch of fudge and going and giving that to a friend that just needs a smile, or things like that.
Awesome. What about for you, Elizabeth? I know you're passionate about food, but I think, you know, it's an interesting thing. Like, my observation can be that sometimes we box people in, like we look and go, man, Elizabeth's really good at food. But I know that for you, hospitality is much more than food. Like, talk to us about why you're passionate about that.
So my background, I guess, is similar to Hannah's, that I came from a very foodie family. My grandparents always, all the stories I ever heard of my grandparents was about, around food. My grandfather was a drover, and he'd be going down the road and he'd come to a home that he knew, and he'd be calling out, "Is the kettle on?" And he'd be going in and he'd be sharing a meal with them and just loving the whole environment of getting into people's homes. That passed on to my mother. My parents always had people in their home. We had boarders that lived with us, but we also, Mum loved to cook a roast on Sunday and invite whoever home, all the waifs and strays. She always waited till the end to see who was left that was lingering, and obviously they needed a meal, so she'd take them home, and then they'd spend the afternoon, we'd play games, and then she'd give them tea, and of course then it was back to church for Sunday night. But so for me, that was what you did. You shared God's love, Jesus' love for us, by sharing a meal. Mike wasn't brought up in a family that was like that, so it wasn't so comfortable for him to do that, but he has embraced it. And then we've always enjoyed having people in our home, and then as the kids grew, it was all their friends. And many a Sunday morning we'd wake up and find bodies everywhere. And we'd be like, oh, okay, there's a house full, okay. And so, and then, of course, we always had them for whatever. Lunch, dinner, whenever, there was always a house full. And it was very easy to do it when the kids were young. And then as they grew and moved off, it became a bit harder for us. And then we got busy doing other things and not always having people in our home. But we do like to do it from time to time, and we still enjoy catching up with friends and with family, and also having a few other people around.
It's interesting what you raised there, because like for both of you, say like, oh, I was in our families, like right back to grandparents, you know about that, and your parents, and then yourselves. But then like you mentioned about Mike, I mean, so you wouldn't gauge that with Mike. When you come to your house, he's just the primo host kind of guy who's like sorting you out and making you pizzas and whatever, you know. Like, but it's interesting for you to say that initially this whole idea of hospitality was foreign to him. So the thing I guess I get in that is going, like, for some of you, you may not have a background with a family that have been, you know, so passionate about hospitality. That doesn't mean it can't start with you or start with this generation, you know, and so that's pretty cool. Hey, look, we're going to get to what hospitality looks like for each of you at the moment, but I actually want to jump straight into what are some of the things that you actually find hard about it? Because for some of us, we might look on and just go, man, oh, you guys are just so good at that, and you just, like, crank out, like, the meals and welcome people over, and your place is always sweet, you know, and all that. But what are some of the barriers that you guys experience, you know, some of the difficulties that you've had to overcome to actually be a family who offer and practice hospitality?
I think I've thought a lot about this over the last little while, and I think maybe like some of the other younger families here, your ability to maybe provide for others or open your home can sometimes change just with the seasons of life. I remember Derek and I would always really enjoy having friends, couples over as often as we could before we had kids. And yeah, we'd put food together and play games and do all sorts and just hang out. So yeah, naturally having children kind of changes the logistics of things. And so you have to kind of juggle things a little bit more and think about how you're going to do that around the needs of your children. So yeah, for personally, for me and for Derek, over the past 5 years, we've had to juggle things a bit differently, especially that since the birth of our boy Talon. He's had a lot of medical problems and health concerns, and so that's been hard for him, and it's meant a lot of changes and a lot of adjusting for us as a family. And yeah, it's been tricky. I think to begin with, it was hard to mesh our new normal as a family and put that into life, into still opening our home to others whilst getting used to a new norm. For me as a nurse, I was kind of familiar with it all, and I understood what it meant, and I knew how to cope with the medical conditions and the equipment and things like that. But I knew that it can be quite confronting for some people. So when I took that stuff and I took it home, it was a completely different ballgame. And so it took a little while just to get used to the idea of doing life with my family and then doing life with this as well. And so, yeah, God did put a work in my heart and helped me to realise that just as we were making the adjustments as a family to incorporate these bits and pieces and you know, that the people that wanted to be a part of our community and part of our family, they would make the adjustments with us. So, you know, maybe feeling a little conscious of the beeping machine in the background or having to stop in the middle of a conversation and go and care for him or tend to him. But that was okay, and that people were going to make those adjustments with us, yeah.
It's interesting because you were talking to me the other week about that, and I guess this is part of hospitality. It's not a one-way thing. It's not like, you're the host, so you're everything. It's people that, say, come to your home. In a way, you're doing hospitality together. And I know you were saying that for you and Derek, there was a point where you're sort of having to decide, are we gonna try and keep on adjusting home every time somebody comes over versus, no, this is our new normal. And part of other people coming over is that they're going to have to adjust to us. Hey? Like, I don't know if you want to say some more about that.
Yeah, no, over this journey, we've had contact with lots of different families that have children with extra needs and things like that, and we saw the way that some of these circumstances can be all-consuming, and they can change the way you do life, naturally. But yeah, it could end up being a barrier to being involved in your community. So yeah, it was a decision to be able to do that, but it was definitely a time probably that we received a lot more hospitality rather than giving, and realising that that was okay for a season.
Yeah. No, that's cool. Great for you, Liz.
For us, it's it gets difficult to balance family, extended family, busy lives, and just remembering to invite people around. We would often say, oh, we must have such and such. Yeah, we'll do that, yeah. And then we don't do it. And then we'll meet somebody else. Oh, we've got to have you over for a meal. Oh, don't do it. And it's just got to stop sometimes and say, hang on a minute. We've actually got to plan this. We've got to do it. We've just got to make it happen. And it's more just following it through and remembering to follow it through rather than just letting it go. And sometimes I have to write lists. Okay, we've got to invite this person, this person, this person, this person. And you find a time, a date, when it suits everybody to do it. And yeah, because otherwise I don't do it.
It's interesting because, I mean, you're somebody who loves doing that, and yet you find yourself in our current kind of world, you know, where there's not much margin. And so it even sounds weird to think that you have to become clinical to achieve hospitality when it's something for you that comes so naturally. But I do wonder if sometimes our culture has become something that, you know, I think this area of lack of hospitality is not a healthy thing in New Zealand culture. And if that's creeping into City Bible Church, which I think it has over the years, then that's not a healthy thing. So in order to bring health to that, sometimes might take a little bit of planning and clinical. You know, we want it to always be just the natural, free-flowing thing, but I think in the past, maybe the way New Zealand culture was, you know, especially more agricultural and that, and the way communities worked, is that naturally we were finding time and there was margin and we were getting around the table together. That doesn't seem to happen so naturally now. So it becomes something that if it's something we value and we see as of value for us as people who love Jesus and are part of his family, and this is an expression of his love, then it's something we're going to have to choose. We're going to have to make adjustments for, and that's not always going to be easy. And you could stay with you, Elizabeth. Describe to us at the moment, you know, with your passion for hospitality, but also some of this busyness, which is one of the things you've talked about. But what does current hospitality look like for you at the moment?
So, for us, I guess getting together with the family once a week, we try, doesn't always happen, is very important, especially now that we've got grandchildren. We like to try and catch up with them as much as we can. Then the next level is friends, that we have a few friends that we catch up. Sometimes we go out for a meal together, which is nice, but often we'll have them in our homes. Friday night we had Paul and Joanne in for dinner. They've just been to England, and we were keen to find out how that went and what they did. And you know, it's hard to talk in church around after church, or it's hard to catch up any other time, so we made a point to have them round for a meal and to hear their story and to enjoy that, and that was great. Another thing that we started this year along with Victoria was at the beginning of the year, Victoria said that she had some international friends that would love to get together every now and again and have a meal, but it's really hard when you don't have a home to go to. And so I said to her, well, why don't you come to ours? We could do that once a month. And so we had the first one, and we had a pizza night because we've got a pizza oven. And that went really well, and everybody was like, oh, can we do this again? So then we had another one. Then we started to do themes of the different countries that the people had come from, which became quite amusing because we still didn't really. So we'd have a French night, and one person would turn up with a French dish, and we're like, well, that's not French. What the heck is that? But anyway, that was what happened. And that became really interesting because we got a whole selection of people. We also had some Kiwis there just to try and keep some balance, of people from different countries, different faiths, different foods that they would eat or wouldn't eat. And so it was about trying to balance that and make them all feel comfortable. One person that has become a regular and loves to come, sometimes he brings friends, sometimes he doesn't, is Adam, who is from Eritrea, and Campbell's talked about Adam from time to time. And of course he's a Muslim, and so he will only eat halal meat. So I always try and consider that when I'm purchasing my food, and I'll either go to the halal butcher, or he will eat chicken. They'll eat chicken that doesn't have to be killed in a certain way, or else a vegetarian. So before the meal starts, I always say to Adam, now this is such and such, such and such, such, so that he knows what the food is, what's in there, whether it's halal, whether he can eat it or not. And so then we welcome them all in and come on in, and some of the faces we've seen before, sometimes we haven't, and we're like, oh, who's this person? Do they speak English? Oh, can we communicate? Okay, yep, we've got a bit there, we'll go with that. And they all bring their dishes in, and then we say, right, just want to welcome you to our home, love having you here. We are a Christian home, so we have a faith, we believe in God, and we just want to give thanks for the food. And so we'll do that, Mike will do it, and then the rest of the evening we just relax and enjoy. We normally have some questions about different countries, and most of us are totally ignorant, and we have a good laugh over that. Even the people from that country are ignorant too, so it's quite amusing. But yeah, it's just a good time to get together. And they just love the fact that they can go to a home and relax and just have a good meal and just enjoy other people. And it's been great. It's been really great. Waiting for Victoria to come back. I've tried to do it while she's away, but I can't get hold of the people that I need to. So
it's interesting that this, what I was describing before is this oriental form of table, how that it was very representative of the village. Like, so the one family, the way that they would host a stranger would reflect on the whole village. And I know through having had several people that go to your Friday night, just without me not asking, them just saying, oh, we had Friday night at Mike and Elizabeth's and talking about it, and you get that sense straight away that as you have represented the village in your home, that means that the reputation of the village has actually been held up. So that's really cool. I just want to thank you guys for doing that. It's amazing. Hannah, what about for you? What does it look like at the moment? Because maybe talk about before and after. Like, what did hospitality look like before kids? Now with your grown family, what does that look like? Because it's changed.
Yeah, okay. Maybe beforehand, I really loved putting things together, whether it be just like I said before, something simple like a gift, or planning a meal, maybe even kind of a really big meal with another person and putting something together and making it special and putting some effort into it. I really enjoyed that kind of, yeah, like the creative side of me enjoyed it. Maybe after having kids, just maybe had to simplify things a bit more and be okay with that as well. Mm. That's all right for a little while. It's like the other, maybe is it last weekend or the weekend before, we had some friends around and they bought buns and chicken and we got some coleslaw and some fillings and we just got together and ate together and hung out and caught up and let the kids run wild and it worked and it was really great. And it was a good way to touch base and be able to catch up with people that it might otherwise be a bit difficult to, because we've got different commitments now. At the moment, and just in the last little while, we've received quite a bit of hospitality through meals being provided to us as a family, which has been really cool because it's shown the people in our community their love for us, yeah. And it's been a real support, and it's been really, really cool. So it kind of comes in ebbs and flows, and just have to be kind to ourselves, I think. You know, it's not always going to be something that we can do without fail every week, and you know, when I can do the same and give a meal back, then I do, and then if I can't, then I can't, and that's all good.
The love one another is interesting there, eh? Because, I mean, like we said at the beginning, you were part of that group that started Young Families, and one of the initiatives of Young Families has been, like, the supporting others with meals. And it's really interesting that you're an initiator in that and somebody that was giving out, and yet it's, like, at times it's come full circle where you've received, and so that's part of loving one another. It's just really cool. Just to wrap up, like, just each of you, just share with us how do you feel like your life has been blessed with this whole thing of whether it's giving or receiving hospitality?
I think maybe it's blessed me because I think God's maybe changed my perspective of hospitality a little bit. So I really value my upbringing and the heritage that I had from the hospitality that I saw in my grandparents and my mum. But I've also realised that, that, you know, the the seasons of life can change what that looks like. And yeah, to not be too tough on myself, but to still look for opportunities where I can enjoy it and can still carry it out. That learning curve has been a real blessing for me, I think.
Cool.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Well, that was a hard question. I'm not one to look for blessings and things. I struggled over that one. But I guess the friendships that we've developed through this, the love that we've shared for other family members, kids that we've got to know through the years, and just being able to be in their lives, even in a small part, just, yeah, knowing them. I still, I run every morning, and some parts of my run I find quite difficult. So one thing I do is, so I don't focus on the run, is I pray for kids that have been through our home over the years. And that helps me get up the hills and do things that I don't like doing. And it just, you know, is a nice way to bring them back to my mind of all the people that have been through our home, or kids anyway. And just, you know, some of them I don't know where they are now, but or I don't know if they're going on for the Lord, but I just pray that he's still working in their hearts. And just being able to, I guess of late, now that our kids have left home and we've got Laura and Ray in Australia and Hugo, and, you know, they come home every now and again. It's just lovely to gather around all the families that have been involved in their lives. And Matthew's going off to Japan shortly, and we're just thinking, well, you know, it'd be nice to gather around the people that have been involved in his life, that have been part of his upbringing, that have made him who he is, and just to have a meal together and celebrate, and just to have a catch up, and it's lovely to do that, and to catch up with them and what they're doing in their lives, and for them to see what our kids are up to too.